Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
That's it.
Nice.
Right, well, I'm delighted to be joined by, hang on, Rory McConachy? Have I got that right?
Yeah, bang on, bang on.
There we go. I tell you what, your name isn't particularly easy. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll see my dyslexia shines through, and it's not an easy name to read yours.
it's followed me around all my life, to be fair. And the weird story behind it is that I was born, obviously, as if people couldn't guess, my name's pretty Scottish,
yeah.
or Gaelic, and so I was born. Rory Lawson McConachy, and mum wanted a Rory, dad didn't want the English spelling of Rory because at the time it was 91 World Cup and Rory Underwood was like the poster boy.
Really?
So yeah, he was happy with Rory, but as long as it was the Scottish spelling. And now the irony being, obviously his son that he named so Scottish was an English winger.
I absolutely love that. So was rugby in your family?
Yeah. Not first class, but dad was a Scottish schoolboy, I think, or definitely tried. He's always loved it. And then both my brothers and me have grown up playing it and sort of been our main sport. And always loved it.
So what are your brothers up to now? Are we expecting them to pop up on the wing for Bath or some other Premiership club sometime soon?
I wish. I think they probably would have been good enough to push on. We played Kent Division 1, Kent Division 2 for Cranbrook Rugby Club, and I think they could have been good enough to push on a few levels there. But my older brother sort of focused on his work, and similar to my little brother now, he's kicking around at Dorking when he fancies turning up. And definitely good enough to play for their first team, but it's whether he actually turns up during the week to train.
Really? Why is there a reluctance for him to train for Dorking? What's he? What's his malfunction there?
I guess it's just he works in the city. You can't always get out in time, and I guess the reality of it is that he's got to have his job to pay the bills. So if that comes first, then it's not. He can't really do much about it. He can't tell. Well, unless I guess he turns around and tells Dorking if they pay him his job in the city, then he'd happily turn up every training session.
I'm pretty sure that there is a rugby club. I'm trying to think who it is now. But there are quite a few really good city rugby clubs. And I'm pretty sure a lot of them change their training just so they can get the lads in once a week. Yeah. Bank of England definitely have a team. But I don't know if it's staff with Bank of England employees.
Yeah, I definitely know HSBC have a team because I played against them when I was playing for Cranbrook.
Do they really?
But they've got a team. They got a great pitch, actually.
Yeah, I was once invited to play for BT Sports against Sky Sport, and I was quite keen for it up until the days running up to it, and I thought, actually, I'm probably nowhere near as good as I think, particularly if, Scott Quinnell's playing. Now, I know Scott is like 45, but I still think that he'd waste me. And there was actually some other names on there. I thought,
he's
pretty
good. He's a massive man.
Yeah.
There's still Will Greenwood who plays a bit, isn't he?
I gave Will Greenwood a try-scoring pass once.
Oh,
Yeah,
claim to fame.
Well, I mean, it was an interception, but I still gave him the pass. So, you've been you've not taken the most normal route into rugby. So, how did you find yourself initially on the Sevens circuit? Because I guess that's where you made your name.
Yeah, I guess. Obviously, yeah. As I said, like we grew up loving rugby, and I would have kept on playing it even if it wasn't my job, sort of thing. But played at school, played at clubs, then did a year out in New Zealand, sort of that stereotypical gap student. Mm-hmm. Worked in a school and played a bit for a club out there, and then came back to uni Gloucestershire, where I played for their team. I think it was like, sort of like Western 1A. Yeah. So we played a lot of uni sort of second or third teams. But like it's good crack, great social. Still got seriously good mates from there. And then through that, I ended up meeting a guy called Phil Llewellyn, who was our coach there, and he was the England students manager at the time, and he sort of suggested that I put myself forward for that, and managed to crack England students the year later, and then from there got invited to Great Britain Uni's seven side, we had a competition. Yeah, had a competition in Brazil. We ended up winning, and actually, I don't think I had sort of the best of the tournaments, but I was on the bench for most of the tournament behind, you know, the referee Hamish Smales.
Yes, I do.
Refs in the front. Yeah, he was starting ahead of me at centre, and then I used to come on in the second half. And ended up coming on in the second half of the final, like I'd done all tournament, but ended up sort of having a great second half, and like everything I did worked out, sort of thing. One of those games where everything you touch is gold, and you could try things that you'd never try in a million years, and it would pull off. So worked out well, and a few weeks later got a call from Simon Amor in the Sevens, just asking if I wanted to do a trial week down there, and that week turned into 6 weeks. At the end of that, they said, look, there's nothing sort of in the budget now, because it was the start of the season, and I still had a year of uni left, and they were like, but there's a potential for you to like have a contract for next season. So there was nothing in stone, so I sort of said, that's great. Went back that year. I just started playing for Hartbury RFC on the Saturday side.
Yeah.
Just through links, just did a pre-season with them and ended up playing for them in that one. So kept on playing for them. And then April time, I got an official offer through, from the Sevens.
So was it ever your intention to play professional rugby? Or was it just something that you enjoyed doing?
Definitely not an intent. By that point, I think you asked me, 16 years old, I would have been like, yeah, that's what I want to do. That's the pathway for me. But I was never in a county side, like through age groups, never in any academy. And sort of by 18, I was like, well, most people, if they're picked in a professional club, that's it now.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm nowhere near that. So it was more, just carry on enjoying it and play to as high a level as I could, not thinking about professional. I was literally few months away from trying to get onto a PGCE and do my teaching degree, and then the Sevens contract came up, so it was definitely not intended, but sort of as I'd had that taste of it when I was on trial with the Sevens, it was something that I definitely wanted to do.
Yeah. But where did you play most of your schoolboy rugby? Was that actually in a school or was that a club?
Played at school, Cranbrook School again. So yeah, played for the school and then played for that local rugby club, which is very, very small club, but massive, like a huge mini and juniors section. And they've actually turned out a few from a very rural area, quite a few sort of pros. So it was myself, but I think Harry Sloan was the first.
Oh, nice.
To come out of there. Yeah, I was at school with his older brother, and then Nathan Earl as well. Nathan's dad coached me all the way through minis and juniors, and then played with his older brother as well.
There can't be a massive age group gap, can there, between you and Nathan?
No, there's what is it? So I think he's had 2-3 years.
Oh, so you weren't turning out in the same Colts team? Or I mean, that'd be terrifying.
No. Wasn't in the same. Yeah, wasn't the same one as him. He's he was 3 years below me, and then Harry Sloan was 2 years because he was in my little brother's year.
I see. So yeah, it all seems to have worked out fairly well for you then, particularly as Simon Amor, your first professional coach, is now residing in England. Have you had any chats with Simon?
Yeah, had some chats. Like, ironically, the first chat I had was about why I wasn't in this current Six Nations squad. But no, it's good. Like, obviously, I know how I can chat to Simon. It's not like I'm chatting to a new coach or a coach that I see once or twice a year. So it's good to be able to have someone that I know and I know I can be relaxed around and chat about whatever. As he's been with me for what it was about 3.5 years, and yeah, loads of ups and downs in sort of that short time. So it's good. It's great. It's great being there. Like, it's awesome. Obviously, put Sevens a bit more on the map. And like, it's obviously a massive challenge for him, having not done 15s in ages. But I honestly think that, like, you know, give him time, I think he could be a really good 15s coach.
Yeah, it's a really interesting. I mean, it kind of dovetails into what I was going to ask you anyway. But I never really thought of the Simon Amor aspect. But you know, how much of a difference do you think it is at planning an attack for a 15s game compared to planning an attack for a sevens game?
Yeah, I think it's a huge. Like, just it's so contrasting. Like, they're not really the same game. They've obviously got the same laws and stuff, but actually they're just so different. Sevens is obviously so much, it's so limited in what you can do in terms of numbers from a strike play or how we're going to play. But I think at the same time, you know, he's a proper student of the game, and I'm yet to meet someone sort of as intelligent as him around the game. He's like a sort of mini human computer, the way he can just work things out for us when we were on the sevens side. So I think he will be good. I think his relationship with him was good over the summer. He came in and helped out with some skills, and he just wants to learn. He wants to get better and stuff. He's a pretty competitive bloke, so I'm sure he'll leave no stone unturned in terms of him getting better as a coach and him getting experience in.
Yeah, and from your experience of him at the sevens, again, I know it's not the same sport, but what are the sort of things that he looks for as a coach, and what kind of things does he demand off you?
His standards are very high, and he is very detailed, which I think can help, which that can translate really well into 15s, just how little things can help massively. So I guess it's those are the main things that stand out for me. I think he is a very nice bloke off the field, but he'll demand as much to you as possible on the pitch and on the training pitch. So I think he can help out the boys loads, and I think it's good to have something different in there.
Yeah, I was talking to Rob Vickerman. In fact, I interviewed him on basically the subject of sevens, and it amazed me the sort of people that are attracted to sevens, as in the amount of detail Rob was talking about the science, you know. The science at sevens. He said that when he was with Ben Ryan, they were training in the middle of the night. So when they landed wherever they go, in Brazil or somewhere, they would be in the right time zone. It just blows my mind.
Yeah. I remember us almost going to a point where we were, depending where which country we went, we would wake up an hour earlier every morning for the 5 days leading up to the flight, or go to bed an hour later. There's loads of details around it, and things like, say, before Dubai or before Sydney, we'd do a training session, and then from there, we'd immediately go into the sort of the change rooms and get into a sauna and try and sort of stay in there for 20 minutes just to really stress our bodies and get used to that heat.
Oh, my God, actually, really?
Yeah. Because, like, it's ridiculous. Like, I think the hottest temperature I played in was 37 degrees in Sydney and Singapore. But I think some of the boys this year, I think Sydney on the first day got up to 44 degrees. So it's like, how else can you replicate that?
Yeah, I don't really know, actually. Sit in a sauna.
Yeah. So it's just, there's a lot of detail goes behind it. And obviously the running loads, we have to be incredibly fit. And I still think I don't think I've been tested physically as much as I was in the sevens. And it's just, it's another level of fitness. And then just to try and think about what moves you're running and what you have to do with the ball in hand, let alone just thinking about how you're going to breathe.
And how do you look back at your sevens experience now? Are you glad that you don't have that workload and the travel and or whatnot? Or are you a little bit jealous of the guys that get to go to all these places still?
I definitely say jealous. I think you know, the big thing about leaving sevens, it was the big argument in my head was why should I? Like, it's such a great environment. Where else? What other job do I get to, like, travel the world like that, follow the summer almost all year? And then the group of boys that are there, that it's, and the management, it's a very special and unique group. I don't think there's anything else like it. It was a tough decision in my head, because I'd obviously never tried 15s, but in the end, that was the reason for it. It was kind of like, well, I'd much rather retire and have tried as much as possible and challenge myself in that way, rather than happily retiring as a sevens player, but with that what if at the back of my head. I definitely do miss the lads and keep in touch with them a lot. It was something that I couldn't sort of, opportunity I couldn't turn down.
Because you guys must get quite close, because you're always on the road. How often do you get home?
So once the season starts, it's probably about six and a half month season. You're probably away for roughly two and a half, 3 weeks at a time, and then back for 3 weeks, then away for 3 weeks. And depending on when the tournament or where it is, like, the travel might be, like, say, if you're going to Sydney, you'll be leaving earlier. If they're going to America, then they'll be sort of leaving probably the week of the tournament. As normally it's the organisation and the tournaments aren't the best there. So they're like, right, well, when it was Vegas, it was sort of like, however cool Vegas sounds as a tournament for the players, it wasn't the greatest. So we sort of rocked in Monday or Tuesday and then played Friday night. So, depending on which tournament would definitely depend on when you'd leave. But you do get very tight. It's, I think at one point, sort of was a 17, 18-man squad, and sort of 12, 13 of us would go on the trip. So you're with the same people throughout the year. And, you know, when you're flying out to the first destination, you're all excited. When you're flying back from the last destination, you're fed up of each other and need those 2 days off before you're back in training.
Yeah, I bet. So this is one of those things that I always think players enjoy. And the reality of it is, a lot of players go to the stadium, they get off the bus, they get back on the bus, they go home. Do you get a chance to enjoy Vegas? Or is it, you do your game, you recover, you're professional, you got to go again?
So we reckon there was something said like to world rugby or something, but they used to, so the tournaments sometimes would be in pairs, but they used to be on one off events. Now there's five sets of pairs, so there's 10 tournaments overall, and like it's not a rule in place, but we've all, as England, we always said like, we won't be going out after the first tournament. We'll enjoy ourselves after the second tournament, just because the demands on your body over a weekend is ridiculous, and you're probably not right until the Wednesday, Thursday following that. So if you do a full tournament and then a night on the piss, you're killing yourself for the next week. We always used to say like, why they put Vegas and Hong Kong first? Like, surely they're the big nights out. sadly, never got to have a Vegas or Hong Kong night out. But you know, the other places aren't too bad. You know, Vancouver was pretty awesome. Cape Town's incredible. So was Sydney and Hamilton. And then London, obviously, it's great having your home crowd and then being able to do an eye out with your families and stuff afterwards is pretty cool.
Now, I'm going to admit something I'm not particularly proud of, but I went to London Sevens last year. It was an incredible event. I mean, it really was an amazing event. I can hand on heart say I can't remember a single minute of rugby. And I wonder if that is a problem for Sevens, because you've got these guys that work so bloody hard to get there and execute these moves and whatnot. And as a rugby fan, a big rugby fan, I didn't actually manage to see a single... I mean, I know I did watch a game, but I could not tell you for the life of me who played or what happened in that game.
Yeah, but like at the same time, we love that. We love the sort of the party atmosphere at the Sevens and stuff. And we know not like maybe the diehard Northers out there will be able to sit there throughout the day sober and watch whatever it is, 40 or 50 Sevens games. But like we love that the events, and you know, if people come back in for the England games or come back in for a few games, then go back out and party. Like it's quality. And I did the same actually for the first time last year. I did it as a fan with a few mates.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, it was good. Yeah.
Which one?
And top fun. Just did the Saturday.
Oh, nice. Well, what? Twickenham.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is
some
a good
point, maybe after I retire, I get out to Dubai and those places because it looks awesome as a fan.
Yeah, well, weirdly, I was talking to a friend of mine who works at World Rugby, and he was explaining to me, because World Rugby own the tournaments, don't they, rather than... World Rugby own the tournaments, don't they, rather than, like, the unions. And they've kind of developed this, and I've never seen them, I've never met them, but they have to develop the hardcore following of people that follow the Grand Prix around, if the Grand Prix is the right word to call it.
Sometimes you do see... we've definitely got, like, there's about... I reckon 5 to 10 sort of diehard England fans out there that will come to most of the tournaments that aren't our players. There's definitely similar groups for each country that will follow it around, and they just love it. Like, and to be fair, if you can afford it and like love the travelling, like why not? Some of the places that they get to go to I'd never thought I'd go to in my life, let alone do it for a job. So yeah. Pretty awesome.
Yeah. Did the smaller nations impress you much? Because obviously they don't have much of a footprint in 15s. But, you know, you got lads out there playing from Kenya. USA is obviously fairly famous for it now. Spain is another one which do particularly well at sevens.
Yeah, there are. And that's, I guess that's the beauty of it. Like, I remember, was it my... I can't remember if it was last year or in my... I think it was in my last year. It was just like, when is that ever going to happen in a rugby context again? And it's definitely a sport where the underdogs can push through. I remember in my first year at Vegas, I think we drew with Japan, and then at the end of that year, Japan went on to come fourth at the Olympics, having beaten New Zealand in the group stage and other teams. So it's awesome for those small teams. Kenya have never been an easy team. It's always tough coming against them just because, you know, they're massive blokes. We know it's going to be seriously physical in the breakdown and stuff, and they just run hard. So yeah, it's great for those small teams. Obviously the island nations like Samoa and Fiji. Samoa obviously were very successful a few years ago, and Fiji are just always there. You know what they're going to bring, but at the same time, you don't know what's going to happen on the pitch because, it's impossible to defend them when they're on their game.
You know that you don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. Expect the unexpected.
So just tell me about the transition then from sevens to 15s. When you were considering it, was it a case of you had to just resign from the sevens team and then pick up the phone to an agent and hope for the best? Or did you already have something lined up to go to?
Definitely didn't have something lined up. We used to do our IDPs with the coaches and what we wanted to achieve that season at the beginning of each season. And I'd had chats with people, and then obviously with my agent, he's still my agent, but my agent, just about, you know, if I could, he said he reckoned I could like make it in 15s, and I was like, if I could, like, yeah, I think it's something I want to try. So I sat down, this is why, another reason I get along with Simon, you know, I sat down with him at the beginning of the year doing my IDP, and he was like, what's your season goal? I was like, well, I want to obviously improve and become a world-class sevens player, but at the same time I want to have a contract offer from a premiership club. And they were really supportive behind it. They said, well, you know, what can we do? what can we put in place to go forward. So I used him. I used Tony Roach at the time, who was the assistant coach, is now with USA. Things that I could work on that would help me in 15. And, my agent put my name out there to a few clubs. And to be fair, the only ones that really came back showing a lot of interest, I'd love to say, like, yeah, I batted away loads of them, but the only people that came back with lots of interest were Bath. So I followed that up.
Amazing.
And a mutual friend here, well, a mutual friend, I had a mate here who was the ex-England Sevens analyst. And he put in a good word for me here and sort of backed me up, and I'm glad now that they put trust in me, put their faith in me.
So prior to playing for Bath, what was the highest standard of 15s that you'd played at?
I guess it would have been England students and then National One.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong with National One or English students, but that's hell of a jump from, that to Sevens, then straight into Bath.
Yeah. It was a big jump. I guess it was obviously the professional environment. The Sevens is bang on with it, and that wasn't a shock. But yeah, it was the detail and stuff of all the moves and the constant info that you have to take on for a week in, week out competition was drastically different compared to a seven season where we'd have a few weeks to prepare for these upcoming competitions, and we know who we're playing in the group stages and that. It was very different. First few months were a big shock to the system. But something that, I'd expected, it definitely wasn't going to be a walk in the park. And I was sort of, I guess everyone's lucky at some stage. And, there were a few injuries, in the back three. Joe, got a call up for England, managed to get a chance off the bench against Worcester and Newcastle, and then ended up starting against Sale.
Yes.
My first Prem start.
Now, was that the Sale 6-3 game?
End of November, December time.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, because if I've got my history right, I'm pretty sure you scored the week before, and then Sale... Oh, dear. Hello?
Hey, mate.
Yeah, sorry. I was going to say, I'm pretty sure you scored the week before. You were scoring quite a lot, actually, I think. But when you came to Sale, was that 6-3?
No, that was the 7-all game. 6-3 was up at Sale later on.
Yeah, that's the one.
Later on in the year.
Glorious game.
Yeah, it was. We really seemed to bring the worst out of each other.
quite the contrary. I'm all for a 7-7. In fact, the joke... Yeah. I mean, the joke was prior to the game, it can't be worse than 7-7. Incorrect. It can be worse.
I'd love to say that, it's just two great defences going at each other, but I think looking back at the analysis of the game, we were just like, what are we doing in attack?
Yeah, well,
they'll be doing the exact same.
Well, I remember you were 1-1, and it was 6-3. Nothing had happened. It must have been like 70 minutes in, and I was convinced that you were going to break the line. In fact, you might have broken the line. I think you were 1-1 with someone else.
I broke the line, and I think I cut in and got tackled by someone.
Thankfully,
and then we screwed it.
Yeah. So coming into Bath, I mean, it's not just a 15s team, is it? It is one of the great 15s organisations on the planet, with some of the greatest players on the planet. And I know you've been around the world and you've played. Oh, actually, we need to talk about the Olympics too. But you've done all these things. Was any part of you a little bit apprehensive about the environment you're going into and the personalities that you were going to bump into?
I think it was. I think obviously going from the Sevens, which like no disrespect to the RFU, it's like the funding is there for the Sevens. But it's not the same as a Premiership club. Is it like the salaries and stuff? There's no rock stars in the Sevens world that like there is in the 15s world. Mm. So I potentially going from there into that 15s environment where I knew. There are a lot of big names, a lot of you know, megastars in the rugby world playing for Bath was a bit daunting. But at the same time, you got to realise that, you know, you're there, you're all there to play for the same team, and if you're doing well and you're working hard, you'll get the respect that way. So, it's great having the names that we do, and like the experiences that they have and stuff you can learn off is awesome. It's also good having, you know, the names that we do in the back three, like Yoroko or Anthony and now Joe. But then at the same time, Bruy's got a few caps for Wales. So it's awesome having the names we do. But yeah, at the start, I guess it was a bit daunting.
So you were starting even when a lot of those names were fit. I know that Watson was injured when you first came over.
Yeah. So Anne didn't come back. It might have been.
It was his calf.
Sale. It might have been actually that 6-3 Sale game. That was his first game back.
Now, do you think it's the fact that you were competing with all those big names and yet still starting, which made you stand out for Eddie Jones when he made his selection? And actually, have you ever been told like what it was that the England coaches really liked, and you know why you're there, and then what's expected of you?
They liked the way they just said that they liked the way I ran, beat people, and sort of just my fight and contact was good. And then obviously aerially, they liked that a lot as well. And I guess at the same time, that's why that was my recent feedback for the Six Nations and stuff. Obviously, I hadn't had the best form coming back from the World Cup. A few injuries at the same time hasn't helped either. So that's what I enjoy doing. Those are the things that I back myself at. It's just getting back to doing that. And yeah, I guess a few times last year I stood out in a few games. It does always help where you're kind of unknown and people don't really know how to defend you.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, the guys were playing well and putting me into.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
It just seemed to work well for me, and I'm glad they picked me up.
Now, with England feedback and with their coaches, are they picking you for what they want you to do? Or are they picking you for what you can do? So what I'm trying to ask there, I guess, is, you know, if you are good at a certain thing, do they want all their wingers to be good at that? Is there a stereotypical winger they want? Or are they just tailoring the team to what each individual is good at, if that makes sense?
Yeah, since I've been involved, I've always had the confidence that they've given me, saying, like, you're good at this, and that's what we want you to do, as in individually. Obviously there's stuff that we want to be as a back three in terms of world class in the air across the board, and that's something we work hard on. But if you look at, you know, if you look at the makeup of the back three at the moment, or what there was in the World Cup, actually each individual is so different. Just from Bath, we've got myself, Joe, and Ant, I'd definitely say we're three very different players.
Yeah, you are, aren't you?
And then there's obviously, Johnny's a very different player. And then Elliot at the time was, obviously a player that can play across the back line, highly skillful and like in lots of different positions. And now they've got George George Fairbank at 15, who's been, I think he's been absolute class in the Prem the last sort of 12 months. So it's good to see, you know, they're rewarding people that have been that have been on form. And obviously, it's been a tough few first games for him, but that's in terms of what weather and opposition. But yeah, I think it's always been sort of back yourself, back what you're good at. And that's why you're here.
What's caught your eye regarding George Furbank? I'm not disagreeing with you at all, by the way, but I'm just interested from like a back three point of view, someone does it professionally.
Yeah, I guess it was like his attacking play I thought was awesome last year, when like especially when we were like looking at playing Saints, and just the way he can link, like you can see he can slot in at 10 if need be. But I guess that his ability to just to back himself and run and find those lines and beat people, and then also have a great boot on him as well, just like helps massively. Like he's not the biggest of blokes, but he does make a lot of line breaks. I think he's a very smart rugby player.
Yeah. I think we didn't see the best of him against France. I think he'll slowly get better because he is a decent player. He's very good actually.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess that's the difference in terms of in Prem, you probably get more chances. 50 international wise, you really don't, and that's probably what I found as well in my two games, that you don't get as many chances as you do in the Prem. So when you do, you've got to take them.
Do you feel under more pressure when you go to England as opposed to when you're at the Bath camp?
I guess not over the summer in terms of leading up to the World Cup. I went in there never expecting in a million years, sort of 2 months before the camp started, that I'd be involved. Yeah. So it was kind of like, look, take people came and went sort of at the end of each week. And it was like, you know what, take each week as it comes. If I'm not here next week, then it's still better than I thought I'd be. So, I was pretty carefree throughout the camp. Just literally just completely went for it in everything we did, whether it was on the pitch or attempting to sort of like socialise and stuff after. I was going to make the most out of it all because I never knew when the chance would come again. But yeah, I guess that was all good. And then when it came into matches, I came away feeling sometimes in the games I didn't do myself justice because I got a bit nervous. I maybe went into my shell a bit, just of that fear of making a mistake. You don't want to make a mistake on international stage, especially at a World Cup, where like the games are, you know, you're under a lot of pressure to perform.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, off the pitch and training, it wasn't a massive amount of pressure. It was a squad that really, you know, really enjoyed each other's company, and you know, that was some of my favourite bits of the socialising stuff and part being part of that squad.
That's a really interesting point you make about the attitude you had towards training, because I guess if you're a seasoned international and this is your last chance at the World Cup, you've already been to one, you might get a little bit highly strung if, you know, you think you're not going to get there. From your case, it could be that the way you could play carefree, train carefree, really played into your advantage.
Yeah, definitely. I think it did play into my advantage. I think I obviously wasn't worried about getting dropped because it was obviously I wanted to be there the next week and the next week after that. But at the same time, it was still incredible, a dream come true to be involved in an England camp, let alone end up going to a World Cup. So yeah, it was just making sure I enjoyed it at the same time, and just really went for it.
How was the team announced to you guys? Was it like on a bit of paper on the back of a changing room, or a text, or you all get an individual call from Eddie?
Yeah, it was on a WhatsApp group, which seems to be a thing.
Well, it just popped up saying England World Cup squad.
Yeah, it's a lot of the time you know, the guys that don't make it are probably told individually.
Yeah.
So if you're not told anything, it's normally a good thing. But we got and put on a WhatsApp group and got literally from there. It was the hotel in London we were staying, and got on the bus from there and went to Bristol for the announcement that afternoon.
That's astounding. So the first time you know you're going to Japan is on a WhatsApp group.
I remember bumping into the manager on the staircase who works with the Sevens for a bit, and I was still like, I was looking at it and I hadn't really processed in my head that it was through, and she came in and sort of like shouted and like gave me a big hug, and I was like, oh, I am, yeah.
what was the WhatsApp group called?
It was literally just the next week's camp. It wasn't even about World Cup. It was because we knew it was after the Wales team.
Oh, I see.
After the initial Wales game. So actually the next week camp would have been Wales away. So it would literally have been something as simple as that.
Wow. Well, who was the first person that you phoned or told?
Would have been my girlfriend. Girlfriend. I think I tried to phone a few people, but it's like standard family. No one picks up. So, my girlfriend, and then, you know, mum and dad, and then my, I know my older brother, I think, was away. I think he was on a school tour or something, but he didn't get it until late.
That's absolutely incredible.
But yeah, it was my close family first, and then I sort of let them tell everyone. I wasn't going to start texting everyone because the news was going to come out sort of 2 hours later.
Yeah. So did you phone your girlfriend to ask for permission to go away for 6 weeks? Bang on time, six minutes.
Yeah, is weird, isn't it?
That is weird. I was gonna ask then. Oh yeah, did you phone your girlfriend to ask permission to go away for 6 weeks?
Yeah. No, I phoned her to let her know she can have a holiday for 2 weeks when she come out. it was awesome. Awesome telling everyone, and actually realised sort of the achievement it is with how excited and emotional they get for you.
Yeah, it is incredible. I mean, it's incredible for players, but I always think it must be amazing for parents and family and whatnot.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, they're the guys that sort of followed you since you first picked up a ball and, you know, were there at those horrible wet Sundays or Saturdays watching you play in a terrible standard rugby game. So to be able to, see their kid doing stuff like that is pretty cool.
Now, as the tournament went on, obviously England got to the World Cup final. How did England go about making sure that the guys who were more on the periphery of the squad felt like, you know, this is a team effort and that we're all involved? And did it ever feel that way?
I think obviously every individual is different. I think as I alluded to earlier, like, I felt myself down sometimes on the pitch. Probably after the USA game, I didn't feel like I fired enough shots in terms of to really challenge for that in that starting 23. Because, like, you know, to be able to challenge in that sort of back three area, you're competing against some of the best back three in the world, and you know it's a testament to them. And it was always going to be tough. So maybe that first day after the USA game, I was pretty down in terms of like that sort of my chance gone. When it comes to, because after that it was crunch time. It was Argentina, France, and then quarters. So it was always going to be, I guess it was always going to be the starting team. We'll never know about France, but it was tough initially for that period. But actually after that, you know, you didn't notice, like, unless you were training and stuff. But even though then the training standards were so high and we were enjoying ourselves training, off the pitch, nothing changed. Like, everyone was still socialising the same. The only time it was different was on a match day where 23 of them would play and, you know, whatever it was, eight of us didn't.
And what did you find yourself doing on the match days that you weren't playing?
So non-23 would train in the morning, because obviously a long tournament, if you're consistently missing out on a match day, then you're going to, fitness is slowly going to go. So you sort of get a bit of a hit in the morning. And then after that, like, as a group, we'd go for food and chill and relax. Like, they were pretty keen on us, you know, enjoying ourselves, because, you know, if you're not picked, you want to be playing, but if you're not, then you don't want to have members of your squad that are going to be gloomy and going to be affecting the rest of the squad. So we knew that was a big important thing. So we'd go out for food, maybe a coffee, just enjoy ourselves until the game, and then we'd all get on the bus. There'd always be two buses to the team, so the whole squad and management would get to the game then, and then we'd be sat by the warm up watching them, and then when we'd go up to the seats in the stand to watch, which was pretty horrible watching, not because you're not playing, just because you can't have any effect on the game, and just the nerves were through the roof.
Yeah, if you're not playing, I mean, it's not, don't get me wrong, playing for coaching Didsbury Soc H is not quite the same as watching the national team when you're involved in the setup. I get that. But when you can't influence the results, it's in a lot of ways so much worse.
It is tough. I think the Australia game was all right, because I felt we were good enough before the game. I think New Zealand, even though if I felt we were good enough, it was New Zealand. It was always going to be a seriously tough test. I never knew we'd play that well and it was that win that convincingly. And then obviously the final is the final and you can't do anything about it. And it was pretty clear sort of from 20 minutes in that it wasn't going to be our day.
How hard is it for the team to pick themselves up after that? Because, you know, on the one hand, they've lost the World Cup. On the other hand, they're in a World Cup final. You know, no matter what anyone says, how disappointed you were to lose that, it's still one hell of an achievement to get there. I know that might be a bit of a losery mentality, but it doesn't change the facts. It's an amazing achievement.
Yeah, exactly. And although it's like, it will still be tough to take for a lot of the guys that are involved, because it could be their last shot. And we know we didn't do ourselves justice on the day. Out of the past probably 18 months, that was probably the worst we played. And to be fair, you know, South Africa didn't let us play.
Yes.
And that was how well they did. So, but you know, it was an incredible journey. I think it was 22 weeks we were in camp for.
Goodness me.
And that was, those were incredible time, and it was just like truly awesome. Like the different experiences we had, whether it was training in England or training in Treviso, and then obviously the World Cup itself was awesome. So the journey was incredible. Like the result at the end of it wasn't what we wanted, but it's still some seriously good memories.
Now, what was your favourite part of Japan? Because I went out there for the World Cup. In fact, I went to the Argentina game and the USA game. I absolutely loved it. But where did you boys enjoy going? More to the point, where did you enjoy going?
I did like Tokyo as a place. Obviously, lots to do. I really enjoyed. Obviously, Kobe was great, as it was sort of my World Cup cap. And we had 3 days or two or three days afterwards, just to relax before we were back in training. So if you had family there, you could spend time with them. If not, you could do stuff like Osaka was right around the corner, so we could enjoy ourselves. And then, I guess every city had its different appeal. I can't say I enjoyed Oita that well. Quarterfinal destination. Not the most things to do there. I mean, the stadium was incredible, but apart from that, it was, there was NAFL. And then our sort of camp before the tournament in Miyazaki down south. I loved it, actually. It was a great hotel, great fatigue. And it was just a great feeling. I think it was the feeling amongst the camp that, you know, we were actually out there. We were out in a World Cup. We had a week to train together, but we'd all made it, and this is why we were here. And it was a great feeling. And just an awesome, awesome country. I probably haven't answered your question in terms of what my favourite place was.
I've got to say, I thought the trip between Kobe and Osaka, that period of time there, because the World Cup had just really kicked off, I think that was all pretty special, actually.
Yeah, it was really good. It was, I think, yeah, it was just, I loved the way the country had got behind it. And, you know, people out in the streets, they could tell you a rugby player from a mile away. but, like, they were mad about it. And I had a few mates that booked last minute to come out. And they, no, Richard didn't come out, did he? Did he come out? Can't remember.
I think you would have mentioned it if I'd have seen him. Yeah.
Yeah, no, he didn't come out. But, like, that group of mates, like, four of them, I think, came out, five of them, and they just loved, they had the time of their lives. So, like, me catching up with them and hearing their stories was class. And, like, my dad came out, my girlfriend came out, and it was, yeah, they just loved it.
Now, you've also been to an Olympics.
Very true.
Which is, I was just racking my brains as you were talking then. You must be the only guy in the England team to have done both, right?
Yes, yeah, in the England team. I think there were a few of us at the World Cup. I think, obviously, Cheslin and Quagga Smith from South Africa. And then...
I bet there's a bunch of boys in the United States that went.
There were two, I think. There was Martin Yusefo, who was actually, like, which is quite poetic, he was my opposite man in the USA game. And we've played against each other for, 4 years now on the Sevens series, and then to come up against each other in the World Cup was pretty special.
I managed to swap shirts with
him at the end of the game.
Which is surprising, because I assume that you've already got that one.
The USA shirt?
Yeah, from the Olympics.
I actually hadn't swapped with the USA team before. I made it a thing in my last year. Trying to make sure I swapped some shirts with different countries, but I'd never got the USA, so that was a nice little bonus.
So, if it was a toss-up, which one? If you had to choose one, which one would you choose? The Olympics or the World Cup?
You can't be saying that. They're just so different, I guess. I guess the Olympic is what the biggest sporting stage in the world. And I absolutely loved it. But then again, the World Cup was such a special journey, and you're not the first person to ask me it, but I honestly don't know. I honestly don't know. Just because they're so different in terms of the journeys around it and the experiences. Maybe ask me in a year or two's time, I might say, but at the moment, I couldn't tell what.
Well, what's it like hanging around the Olympic Village? That must be a fairly strange experience.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was. I've always so like apart from rugby, like I grew up absolutely loving athletics and the Olympics itself. Like I've always been a massive, massive fan of it, and like used to just be glued to the screen every time sort of the Diamond League or the World Champs were on. So like being there and seeing all the athletes that I'd grown up watching there. Was so cool, and this was my first year in sort of professional rugby, so it was still all relatively new to me. It was incredible. Like first lift, I remember getting in. Like Bradley Wiggins was in, and the cyclist and the rest of the cyclists. Andy Murray was around, and like Justin Rose was a really big fan of ours. We always chatted to him and stuff, and got like I think we did two gym sessions, and he was in there at the same time. So we ended up just chatting and having a laugh. And then obviously the after parties, you're all the GB athletes go to this one place, like the GB house they had, which was like put up by Team GB. And there's obviously free bars and stuff in there, and it's like everyone's there for the same reason. Everyone's partying. It's the end of a cycle for a lot of those guys who've been in those sort of lottery funded sports.
Yeah.
So see them like at the end of sort of 4 years of hard graft, finally let loose and just know how much they're enjoying it is pretty special. It's an incredible, incredible environment.
Did you feel like a GB athlete, or did you feel like a rugby player at the Olympics?
I guess a part of us felt definitely as rugby players at the Olympics. We felt because it was our first year that Sevens was involved, we felt like the newbies into Team GB.
Yeah.
But then again, we went out to a holding camp at a place called Belo Horizonte, which is sort of an hour north of Rio, but the same climate and stuff and time zone. And we were there with the athletes with the athletics and the swimmers were there. I'm pretty sure it was those two, like the triathletes as well. So actually we got chatting to them up there for a week before we actually went into the village, and then like getting the medals and stuff and seeing these people on like nights out. Like the first night the night after we won the silver medal, we went to this Team GB house, and a lot of other athletes are there, and you, like, if you win a medal, you go in and sort of get presented and stuff, and then before the night kicks off, and you're wandering around like with your mates or your family that are there, and there's these guys that have been to two or three Olympics before you and never won a medal, and like the joy in their face, like seeing you and like holding your medal and asking like, you know, can I hold it and stuff and see what it's like, and you're just like, I've watched you on TV over the last like 8 years, like, I know who you are, but you're asking me if you can sort of hold my medal. It doesn't seem really that fair, but then you realise sort of how special it is to get that far.
Did you ever think when you were looking at the other athletes that you wished you played another sport, or you wish you'd given something else to go, judo or swimming or some such thing?
A sport?
No, as in like instead of rugby. Did you ever think like, actually, damn, I should have gone into fill in the blank?
I think I'd probably want to go athletic. I think you look at the buzz, like if I when I was growing up, if someone said Olympics to me, the first thing I think of is 100 metres or something similar in athletics. I think it'd probably be, you'd probably want to go into that. Like if you're the fastest man in the world, it's quite a cool title to hold, isn't it?
Isn't that Colin Isles? That's what I thought.
Yeah, Jesus. Yeah. God, I honestly think if he changed allegiance and was in Great Britain, he could make our Olympic sprint team. He is rapid.
He is rapid. Just one last thing on the Olympics then. After doing that, and after witnessing all the lottery funded guys, and it's not, you know, I don't think people understand this, but it isn't all glamour working 4 years just to go to either the Commonwealth Games or an Olympics. It's pretty hard. Do you feel quite fortunate to be a rugby player, and how you boys get looked after in comparison?
Yeah, I'm massively fortunate. You know, you hear stories after the Olympics have happened, and like, you know, someone's came fourth in a final, and then they get their funding cut, and suddenly they can't be a professional sports person anymore, and it's a brutal world. And I think you hear stories of people without funding winning the British Championship, especially in certain like disciplines and athletics, and it is very tough. You know, they've got to try, and they're trying to compete against the best athletes in the world in their discipline, and some of them have to do it on a part-time basis because they've got to provide for the rest of their families. So we were hugely lucky. Obviously, I think the RFU helps a lot with the Team GB rugby side. We were based at Lensbury in the lead up to it, in London, and yeah, we were massively fortunate with that, and I'm just so happy we did so well.
Yeah, well, it's an awesome experience. I mean, it really is something rather special to be involved in. Are you fit and firing now for rugby? Have you still got a knock?
Yeah, touch wood. I'm fit and firing. It's been a bit of a niggly comeback from Japan since. Yeah, the last few months, I think I broke my hand second game back, and it was misdiagnosed as sort of bone bruising, and I can't ask for, like, it didn't show up on the scan. So it's not like the physios at the club got it wrong. They were literally just going off what the specialist radiographer said. So I played on, sort of four games thinking it was bone bruising, and it just kept on hurting every time. So finally, they were like, no, we want another scan, and funny enough, it was broken in two places. So got back from that. And then suddenly, weirdly, in the warm-up to the Leicester game, I've never had a quad issue in my life, and I've just done all my speed warm-up, felt fine, pushed off in the back's units bit, which is maybe 3 minutes long, and just I felt the slightest ping. And having done sort of hammy tears in the past, like I know when I've tore my muscle. It's the same feeling, and I just knew it wasn't I probably could have run at 80%, but obviously there's the risk of making it worse, and then you don't want to be that guy that says he's fine and then a minute into the game says he's not fine. So that was a bit of annoying, as I only sort of played the Ulster game and then was out again. But luckily we had that 2-week break in games. So fingers crossed, back fit now, and hopefully get a good run of games together.
Excellent. Well, this interview will go out a week later, so you can confide in me now. Will you be starting this week? Are you actually available for selection on this weekend?
Dan to start this week. Obviously, like in terms of the wing stocks, it doesn't help at the moment with obviously Anthony recovering, Joe also out, and then you know me and Rocco played last weekend. Gabe Hammer-Webb's been, I think he's been class every time he's played this year, and probably. It should be a bit scary for us that he's only 19 and absolutely carving up. So he's away with the England 20s at the moment, and doing well for them. So it'll be good getting him back. And then obviously when the other two get back fit as well.
I tell you, the player who I'm really enjoying this season is Tom Homer. I remember Tom Homer breaking through at 19 and being absolutely brilliant. In fact, I don't know if you know this, he was actually Premiership top scorer one season.
He got the golden boot as well, didn't he?
And his injuries, not quite come back. But if he starts to fulfil his early promise, I think he's a cracking player. So fingers crossed for him.
Yeah, definitely. I think he had a few niggly injuries last year. Obviously, it's hard if you're not in the team and you've got a guy like Am Watson starting in at 15. It's incredibly hard to try and break in that way. But I'm so happy he's had a run of games, and he's been outstanding and just like can create magic, and he's super safe under the high ball, and he's also got a massive boot on him. So if he's playing well, we're playing well. So I hope he stays fit.
Awesome. Well, hang on. Rory, no. How do I say
him? Rory.
Rory. There we go. Rory. Can I just say it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for being so candid with me about your experiences throughout professional rugby. Where can one find you on social media, and do you post much?
So I'm on Instagram and Twitter, both under the same handle, which would be Rory spelled my way, or Rory.
Rory?
MCC, and that's it.
Excellent. Mate, thank you so much. We'll have to have you on Egg Chasers soon, and we will need to do this again someday.
Yes, no, looking forward to it. Thanks a lot, mate.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc. Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.